In the name of God, Creator, Redeemer, and Sustainer. Amen. Our readings for this Labor Day Sunday are readings that are troubling. They contain issues that have bedeviled folks of the faith for centuries. I want to start with the letter to Philemon, which Vince read so beautifully. It's the shortest letter of Paul, and it's often overlooked. And it starts out in beautiful, beautiful language of welcome and greeting and love and affirmation. But what the letter is really about is that Paul is in prison, and he is in prison with a runaway slave, Onesimus. And Paul is writing to Philemon to tell him that he is sending the runaway slave back into slavery with Philemon. Now, we don't know a lot about the circumstances of the letter. We're not sure where Paul is in prison, but we think Ephesus. But it's unclear what Paul is trying to do. Is he feeling guilty about sending a runaway slave back? Is he wondering about breaking the Roman law and not able to do it, and so spends a lot of time trying to explain himself? Perhaps in Paul's way, he's trying to argue with Philemon, a new convert to Christianity, that he is to show greater love when Onesimus returns home and release him as a slave. He doesn't say that particularly, specifically, but we wonder if that's what he's up to. And Onesimus, who has been a convert as well in prison, has he converted in order to make things better for himself? We don't know. But it's a troubling passage and letter in many ways, couched in beautiful language. What are we to make of Philemon, so intensely personal as it is, this letter, yet so accepting of an institution, slavery, that we now find universally repugnant? For all his sensitivity, Paul is at pains in this letter, because when all is said and done, he's observed the Roman law, and he is returning the runaway slave, not harboring him or protesting the system, as some of us might like to do. He promises in his own hand to make restitution for the slave, any losses that the slave owner has incurred. Of course, this passage was used to many people's detriment about 150 years ago or more. And it also brings to us as people of faith about when do we take the Bible literally? When do we think, well, the culture and canons have changed, so we should interpret it differently? When should we protest the system or work within the system? Troubling questions couched in beautiful language. And then we have the prophet Jeremiah and the potter's wheel. The potter does not just build up the clay, but often when the clay, if you've ever been done pottery before, if the clay is on the wheel and it's not doing very well, you just take it apart and start all over. Will God destroy those of us who haven't made a good way of it? In Jeremiah, we have the question, do our actions as human beings really ever have any effect on what God decides to do? Can we avert what God has in store? Can we change his mind about destroying the clay and starting again? Can the divine mind change its mind? We wonder that when we have a hurricane approaching. We're saved this time, but what about next time? What makes the hurricane do what it did? Is it God? Is it creation? These two passages ask us to think carefully about what we think about God and about our own role in our society as Christians. And then finally, we have the Gospel of Luke. That's not such a pretty picture either about what's required of a disciple, giving up all our possessions. So where are we left after these three readings? What do we think? I began to think a little bit about what we can do as human beings, and I thought about the relationship of God and humans as parent and child, and I've been thinking a lot about what it is to be a parent as I send my final child off to college for her first year. Have I done the things I need to do? Have I said the things I need to say so that she, in the hands of God, the potter's clay in her own life, will know what to do and what decisions to make? Have I said the right thing or said too much? I think that one of the things these passages makes me think about is that good can come out of mistakes, failure, wrong times, and that God understands that. And here's the example that I'd like to give. There are really two examples. One comes from Thomas More's Life at Work. It's a book that I'm reading right now. And he says that when you look at the stories of successful people, you notice that many of them had negative elements in their past. Oftentimes, they didn't spring up from well-intentioned parents and social settings. Sometimes, what appeared to be negative influences turned out to be a positive push forward. And the one individual that Thomas More identifies is Dr. Jonas Salk. He's the famous researcher who worked on the polio vaccine that most of us in this room have had. It was one of those rare accomplishments when a vaccine in a single stroke saved countless lives. It used to be that people saw people with polio regularly, the after effects, knew people who had been in those iron lungs, but now it's very rare. Jonas Salk came from a family of Russian immigrants without much education. And as a youth, Salk knew he wanted to do something to help humankind, and he seriously considered becoming a lawyer or a politician. But his mother had little confidence in this idea. This is what he said: "My mother didn't think I would make a very good lawyer. And I believe that her reasons were that I couldn't really win an argument with her." Now, sometimes parental advice can turn to harassment and even emotional abuse in some homes. But I'm not talking about those kind of comments. I'm talking about a parent making an observation that stays with you and affects you way in the future. The other example I have is an example from my own life. Not long after I was married, my father and my husband, Brian, would often go and have dinner together, and that's when my father would really try to find out what was going on with me. He wouldn't ever ask me directly. So what would happen? Would there be a dinner with lots of silence because my father really didn't know this young little 22-year-old man he thought of as a boy across the table from him, didn't know what to talk to him about. And Brian the whole time was thinking, well, do I call him Scott or Mr. McGill or what do I call him? So there was a lot of silence, but by the end of the meal, probably after a couple of scotches, my father said, "Well, I need to ask you a question. Is Martha really happy? And I'm worried that this law school is not a good thing for her." Now, he couldn't say that to me directly, but he said it to Brian, and Brian relayed it to me, as families do. And that comment stayed with me through a lot of years of struggle and confusion about my role in life. Parents can steer a child in positive and negative ways. And in the long run, it's better for a parent, I think, to speak his or her mind and then let the child digest it and make their own decisions than it is to never say what's in your heart. For example, Jonas Salk didn't consider his mother an obstacle. Well, he probably did occasionally. But on the contrary, he felt encouraged by her. You may wonder about a highly intelligent, thoughtful man making a life decision based on his mother's belief that he couldn't win an argument with her, that he couldn't deal with a court if he couldn't win with her. But sometimes the hard molding leads to positive decisions, those hard things that stay in your mind. Salk knew that whatever he did, he had two general principles in mind as he grew up. First, to foster an innate sense of wonder whatever he did in life, and two, to make a contribution to humanity. Combined with the love of a mother who knew her son well and had a vision of his future, her simple comment on his ability to argue became just one important piece of Salk's molding. Think of what would have happened if he hadn't kept that in his heart. And so as I go back to these difficult readings, especially the Potter's Wheel and Philemon and the Gospel of Luke, we all make mistakes as we go forward. Paul perhaps should have kept Onesimus with him, but he didn't. And in the Potter's Wheel, God molds and molds and molds, and I believe ends up where Psalm 139, which I didn't talk about, ends up. The Lord knows us, each of us, beyond belief. He knows our gifts and what will be our gifts. And God continues with us as we continue to take wrong turns and to make wrong choices and to perhaps take a lot longer to get where God would like us to go than we need to. But God continues to mold us and work with us to make the whole creation new. Despite our world, despite our wrong turns and misdirections, and I think especially in spite of those misdirections. So I ask you, I always like to have a question at the end. I ask you, what might be something that stayed with you from someone very dear to you, perhaps a parent, perhaps a grandparent, perhaps a dear friend or loved one said to you that you knew was the truth, and it helped you wind your way back to where God had created you for. So I ask you to think of that and to know that when we do make wrong decisions and when we do perhaps not challenge authority when we have the opportunity, that God understands that and God continues to mold us. Amen.